Good morning. We would like to welcome everyone to the Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, June 3rd, 2010. I would like to excuse Councilmember Dennis Kavanaugh, who is out of town, and Councilmember Scott Summers, who has a work-related conflict, and neither one of them will be participating this morning. The first thing on the agenda is to review the items for next Monday's City Council meeting agenda. Page 2. Page 3. Councilmember Higgins?
Item 6F, it's more of a general question regarding when we change the liquor licenses at different establishments. Great, thanks. And the question I have is, do we ever go and look at, you know, their calls for service and their violations and how they're doing related to city, you know, being a good tenant or a good liquor license holder?
Yes, Mayor and Councilmember Higgins, we do. We ask for those reports to come, and we do provide those, and we do look those over. And if there's anything that sticks out of that, we put that in our other information that we provide to you so that we could evaluate that, so that you could decide if that's something you'd want to evaluate when you make a recommendation for approval or denial.
So if there was a big problem, you would point it out, we'd talk about it?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mayor.
Okay. Anything else on page 3? Page 4? Page 5.
Here.
Councilmember Higgins.
Item 7H is a term contract for jet aviation fuel for the police department. And there comes Ed. And I had wondered, I know my understanding is that we, the city, reached out to the FBO's fixed base operators at Falcon Field to see if they could quote, and nobody did. Do we know why they didn't want to quote on this?
Mayor.
I just wonder, because, you know, obviously, it'd be great if we could keep those contracts in Mesa.
Sure. Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, generally what we've found is that they're buying fuel the same way we are, so their pricing as they purchase it is probably comparable to what we're purchasing it at, and then they would have to have some kind of a markup on top of it. We're also a small use, so I don't think we really rose to their level of interest.
In addition to that, Falcon Executive told us that they just didn't feel like they could be competitive at this point, so they just chose not to. And Tango One let us know that their supplier was going to be submitting a bid for this, and so they didn't want to compete with their supplier.
And do they know what, I mean, did they have an idea of what the quotes were coming back as to say we can't be competitive? So they just guessed that they couldn't be competitive.
Yes.
There was the previous history, the previous contract, as well as the bid that was done. I believe it was in the beginning of this year.
So we actually
did rebid it.
We rebid it.
Okay.
We wanted to make absolutely certain that they had every opportunity to be a part of this.
And we did meet with both parties, or had conversations with both parties about the contract.
Because I figure the more you buy, the cheaper it gets. So if someone's already buying 500,000 gallons and we add our 100,000 on top of it, then you'd think they would get it cheaper than we would get it. So it was just kind of odd that we didn't get any. We'll try again next year.
We will.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on page 5? Page 6? Page 7? Page 8, page 9, Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, anything to do with item 8K, 8L or 8M, and it was regarding the police's answer to this annexation. So let me just flip over there really quick. And their response to what it would be for is that the anticipated impact would be an additional 0.8 officers to handle the increased calls for service in that area. And my understanding that Superstition District, which is where this is at, only has 0.8 officers per 1,000 residents. So this development adds 147 houses. So proportionally, it's way off. So I wonder if that was just a number we came up with. If that's real, then this is a big impact, police officer-wise, because it's like 0.8 per 150.
And I can see that there are staff that are rushing to the stand to answer this
question. Come on.
Come on, not everybody at one time. Mark, you want to get up? You probably can answer as well as anyone else can. Mark, Mr. Sorensen says it's fine.
Okay. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everything else is fine, and we've gone over the details, and this is going to be a good annexation case, and they're coming up to every city code, but that just seemed out of proportion.
Right. Mayor and council member, we'll look back and check the response we got from the police. Slight chance we made a typo, and it's supposed to be 0.08 or some number like that.
Okay.
We'll check that, and if it is 0.8, we'll get back with the person who provided that information.
Yeah, I agree.
And see how
with 127 units.
140.
Spaces? What is the number?
I thought it was 147.
147.
We'll just say 150. Let's round it off.
Either way,
anyway,
well under 1,000.
Anyway, so. Well under 1,000, yeah.
We'll check that back and have a number for you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. One other item on page 9 is that Councilmember Kavanaugh asked that item 8J be removed from the consent agenda. So 8J. Page 10. Page 11. Councilmember Higgins.
Are we going to discuss item 9K in detail this morning?
I think if you'd like to, because I have an issue on that, and I know Councilmember Richards
has. We can do it now, or we can do it at the end of the...
Why don't we go ahead and do it now?
Okay.
Mark, you can come up for this one.
I know a little bit more about this.
I would have been worried if the police department started coming up for this one. But,
Good morning, Mayor and Council. This morning, we just wanted to give you a brief summary of an update of what we've been up to over the last month. On Monday, we have a resolution before you that has three parts. The first part is the adoption of station locations for our light rail extension. The second portion is the traffic configurations for that alignment. And the third point is very important for our FTA, Federal Transit Administration process, is a resolution that says that we are supportive of the financial commitment to operate this extension once it is built. So back in a couple months ago when we were before you talking about the station locations and traffic configuration, you had asked us to go back and look at some additional station locations near Alma School at Extension and as well as mid-block between Extension and Alma School. And we've done some work, and we have an update on some of our findings for you. With that, I'd introduce Mark Sorensen and Wolf Grote, who will be discussing this in more detail.
Okay, thank you, Mike, and members of the council. As Mike mentioned at the Transportation Infrastructure Committee meeting a week or two ago, there was a request to look at the stations again in the area between Sycamore and Country Club, specifically taking a look at whether or not it made sense to relocate the station that we were proposing on the west side of Alma School and locating a station in between Alma School and Extension as an opportunity to provide some additional redevelopment opportunities in that section or along that section of Main Street. So we went back and we looked at quite a bit of information related to that, specifically economic development, cost, both on the operational side, travel time right away, how things connect, because obviously whatever we do, it's real important that we provide connections to other forms of transit, specifically bus connections, because we know a lot of our riders come from bus and either come from bus or go to bus. Eligible historic properties, because in that section of Main Street there's been some concern expressed by the State Historic Preservation Office. And we've also taken a look at demographics, and keep in mind that the demographics that we looked at specifically relate to what's in the regional forecast for that area that are prepared by MAG. And it has nothing to do with redevelopment, but it has to do with trends that the Maricopa Association of Government sees in that area, and those get into the analysis. And that's basically the best information that we have. And I guess the bottom line that we do want to talk about is no matter where we put a station in that area, it's going to be a win-win situation. And so obviously that what we're trying to figure out is, okay, where do we get the best opportunities for some of the goals and objectives that we have in that area, most specifically not only economic development, but ridership, connectivity to the bus system, cost is a very important consideration, both on the capital side and the operating side, not just rail operations cost, but bus operations cost, because whenever we start moving things around, we do get an increase in operating costs, or potentially get an increase operating costs in buses. So we looked at all those different factors, and Councilman Richens had some good points that we wanted to bring up and say, you know, certainly putting a station in that area has some significant merits. There's what we found in that area, that there's the demographics make sense, the economic development opportunities make sense. But we really came down to some dilemmas on, gee, what do we do in that area, and where's the best location for stations? And then we also came up with, you know, there was also a request at the Infrastructure Committee to say, gee, what happens if we add a station and have an Alma school and an extension station? And we wanted to recommend that opportunity, or I should say that scenario, be dismissed and should not be pursued, because that has not only a capital cost, but it has a ridership hit. Because we're all of a sudden slowing down trains, and when we slow down trains, we know that the ridership goes down. So having the station locations, it's a real balance, and we're recommending that we don't add an additional station.
Councilman Richens.
Mark, I got a question about that. I was looking that up on your slide about decreasing ridership, and we have that same situation going west into Tempe, where there's a lot of stations, slow trains, yet Sycamore is the highest boarded station in the system, and it doesn't seem like the slow trains and the multiple stations through there have had any connection with ridership. And so I don't understand how adding a station decreases ridership. I mean, is there really that explicit of a connection?
Well, Councilman Richens, what I can tell you is from the travel forecasting work that we did when we were planning that section in Tempe, which you're talking about, is we always knew that Sycamore was going to be a high demand location. And what we're seeing on the travel demand is, okay, Mesa Drive is going to be a high demand area, and as we extend east into Gilbert, that's going to be a very high demand area. We're seeing the travel sheds in the East Valley to be large. In fact, they're larger in the East Valley than they are in the kind of the Northwest Valley. So we're seeing those demands. Okay, having said that, when we were looking at the station locations during the 20-mile process, and Wolf and I have a lot of, I don't want to say wounds, but a lot of history on how those stations got to be where they are and what ones were recommended for advancement and which ones weren't. And I'll use Smith Martin as an example. When we were going through the planning process for the 20 miles, it was, at the time, RPTA's recommendation, then became Metro's recommendation, that some of those stations that you see at locations like Smith Martin not be advanced. Tempe made the decision to advance those station locations. Now, we did the similar analysis back then, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but we were seeing very low boardings at some of those stations, and we were seeing the trains slow down, and there was a direct relationship to some of those boardings, or I should say the ridership numbers, and the train speeds. Now, there's always a balance that we get into, is access versus speed. So we looked at those stations. Smith Martin, I believe, was one of those stations that if we added it there, we were going to have a hit on ridership. We are not seeing the ridership at a Smith Martin location, and we've got those charts. In fact, we're seeing the ridership at the Smith Martin location at about what we expected that we were going to see, which is low. And that was one of the
Mark,
reasons.
I'm having a little hard time believing that one station decreases ridership. Isn't it more of a cumulative effect? I mean, if you add one station here and now combined with Smith Martin and combined with another station and combined with another station, wouldn't the ridership be based on a perception that the system is slow rather than on a single station?
Yes.
I think that's a correct statement.
That's kind of the short answer to the long answer that I just
gave.
Because
what we're saying is that we're going to have three stations between, you know, Country Club and Mesa Drive, and if I'm hearing you correctly, adding another station between Alma School and Country Club, you think is a tipping point or a potential tipping point that people just say, wait a second, now I'm going to be stopping every half mile. now I don't have a light rail, I'm not going to ride it. Is that what I'm hearing? Because
yes, that's basically what the travel model's picking up too, is that because we're adding a station, even though we're gaining some access at a location, we're also slowing things down.
I mean, you could argue that if Smith Martin weren't there, that extension wouldn't have a potentially negative impact much at all. But since Smith Martin's there, since you have at least two stations in Tempe that I think Metro, if I recall, Metro argued against, and Tempe pushed and went ahead with anyway, and neither one of those are very high ridership. And I know that that affects my decisions because now the trip into downtown Phoenix is longer.
You could
is
almost,
that what we're getting at?
Yes, and I think you could almost make the argument that the demand at Sycamore would be higher. The demand at the 101.
That's really hard to measure. You can make an argument, but it's really hard to measure. This at the end of the day, this is really a gut call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we also looked at, as I mentioned before, stationed somewhere in the area that's west of Extension and east of Alma School. We looked at a mid-block location, and we looked at a location that was just to the west of Extension. And like I said earlier, there's definitely warrants for a station location in that area. But what we were trying to do is figure out, okay, not at a station, not to get to the mayor's point, but where do we get the biggest bang for a station location? A couple of the positives that we saw in the area west of Extension is that there's certainly some very good opportunities for redevelopment and transit-oriented development, creating more of a neighborhood environment in that area. There's a strong market in there. We do have a minor increase in capital costs in that area just because of the way the geometrics for engineering weighs into that. But probably the biggest one that we see is about $150,000 a year in annual additional bus operating costs, because what we're doing with a station in the area of Extension is we would have to bring the buses to Sycamore, or we bring the Alma School bus to Sycamore, just like what we're doing today. And in the current plan, our proposal is that the Alma School bus would no longer divert to Sycamore. It would just run north-south on that, making connections, better connections or more efficient connections to the Fiesta District, in addition to the areas to the north in the Riverview area. So we're seeing some strong demand from the Fiesta District, and we're also seeing some strong demand from the north up towards Riverview. So we would have that cost if we did that. We don't have an opportunity to provide a connection going to the east and turn the bus around that would provide the efficiency and reducing that number. It did mention that we see a little bit better improvement in ridership at Alma School, and we do have some issues with historic properties there that we'd have to work through. Not to say that those are showstoppers, but we would have to work through a couple issues with the State Historic Preservation Office at that location. We think that the station at Alma School really provides better access. And we looked at the location both on the east side of Alma School and on the west side of Alma School. The west side of Alma School is where we landed, and we landed there, and frankly we had quite a bit of discussion with our advisory committee that we were working with on whether or not that station should be on the east side of Alma School or the west side of Alma School. We landed on the west side of Alma School primarily for two reasons. One was the access to any expansion that EVIT would have, and the other one was the ease of redevelopment at the property that's on the northwest corner of Alma School and Main. Bus operations, whether we're out in the east, southwest corner, I'm sorry, southwest corner, the Walmart site that where Fry's still is. Bus operations would be more efficient. It doesn't really matter what side of the intersection we're on. We do have good opportunities for informal park and ride at both sites. And operationally, what we do, especially if we're on the east side of Alma School, all of a sudden all our stations in the East Valley are on the east side of the major arterial, which makes some ease of wayfinding and just some consistency. So where we are right now is we're recommending that we do have a station at Alma School whether it's on the east side of Alma School or on the west side of Alma School. From our perspective, there's a little bit of additional cost on the east side of Alma School. Frankly, there's a little bit more utility work that needs to take place. Our estimate is it's about $100,000 worth of work on the on that addition. Again, that's on the capital side. That can certainly be absorbed by the project budget. And we do have a little bit more real estate impact on the west side, but frankly, it's minimal, and at this stage of the game, it's pretty hard to tell exactly what the additional impact is and whether or not it's we're estimating, but it's about 2,000 square feet of additional property. But that is spread along. It's not 2,000 square feet at one location. It's kind of spread along, and those properties are we have some impacts on those properties, whether we're on the east side or the west side anyway. So with that, we'd like to open it up for questions and understand where we're headed.
Okay. Councilmember Finter.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate the transportation and infrastructure meeting that we had to kind of really understand more clearly what's going on. I still have concerns about the end of the line. My first concern is that we keep saying it's at Mesa Drive. I know that's a major point that we can point to that people will recognize. This is well past east of Hobson Road. When you talk about the end of line track storage, you know, when we're talking about where the station's going to be put. So my issues would be, or my concerns would be, things that have not been remedied yet that I don't want to use this pun, but I see the train a-coming, and it's with regard to some land acquisition, placement of some infrastructure that's needed at the end of the line. I've since that transportation board meeting, I've had someone come and talk to me concerned about what's going to happen to their business and their situation at the end. And I know that's Vice Mayor's district, but they came to me. So what I would like to do is take this off consent and see if we could have just a brief overview that really, I think the Alma School issue sounds like it's all worked out, and that was Councilmember Richens. Just maybe a brief overview of end of line with some boards that show where this is really going, where the end of the line trains will be stored, and then some questions that we know haven't been answered yet of where the park and rides are going to be, what's going to have to occur on the taking as far as land acquisition. Just a brief summary, and my motivation is that we will have had a public meeting again. We'll know the issues are out there, and so no one can say, hey, you know, I didn't get my opportunity. So if we give the opportunity, it's off consent, and then we get it done, it's crystal clear for everybody, so there isn't any vague. So, Mayor, that would be my request.
And I think that's actually a good idea. You know, I think that this is an important enough decision that it merits a formal presentation in a council meeting. Not that we haven't, you know, really gone overboard to open things up, but I don't think anyone's going to be hurt by taking a few extra minutes and allowing that public input in a formal council meeting. So I would support that also. So let's move 9K off consent. And if you'd come prepared on Monday to give an overview, addressing some of the major issues that were talked about. Is that okay?
Okay.
Mr. Butler?
Mayor, Council, we would, if possible, there seem to be, through some discussions that that staff has had with Council over the last several days, some consensus building towards the Alma School location, and we would need to draft a resolution that reflects the will of the Council that they could consider as far as east versus west
fine.
Alma School.
Although I know Councilman Rich and I have a question as to what that consensus is, because I guess this is different than what I had heard just recently. So as far as the site of...
Well, actually, Mayor, and that's what we wanted to see. We came with our original recommendation a month ago of West Alma School. After doing some research and further analysis, we're basically saying from the staff standpoint, we would be happy with either East or West Alma School. We've heard several council members weigh in with their desire to possibly move the location from West Alma School to East Alma School. And if that is the desire of the council, It would be helpful today so we can make those changes to have the resolution.
I agree with you. I think that we should come out with a decision as to what that resolution is going to be, rather than not expecting to debate it on Monday night as much as have a presentation and therefore present it. And if any citizen wants input at that time, that's a good time for them to have their final, not their final, but at least an opportunity to say that. So, Councilman Richens.
Yeah, I think if all things being equal, just to be consistent that we're always on the east side of the street. Plus, I think your ridership on your, if buses are the major issue, you guys have been talking about that a lot, and the majority of the population lives south of Alma School, would be a much easier connection to get to our downtown, at least, to get off on the east side of Alma School and just walk over to the station. So I'm going to recommend Station B as shown on the station locations if you're going to craft a new resolution that so they'd all just say east of Alma School, east of Country Club Drive, east of Center Street, and east of Mesa Drive. And then, yeah, we should have a good, robust public hearing on Monday night on this issue.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
When we went through the public process with the stakeholders, the Alma School station was the one that was least definitive as far as recommendation from individuals on that group. The other stations were pretty solid in what their expectation was. The Alma School, looking at, as we had the Transportation Infrastructure Committee discussion, there were questions about being a little further away from the Sycamore Station, going on the west side as opposed to the east side, which was an initial recommendation. You have more opportunity for folks on the east side as far as getting the ridership, but as far as impact, said there's a little bit more in infrastructure as far as some utility movement, but as far as property taking on that north east corner, whether we put the station on the west or the east, it still requires taking along that northeast corner. So that impact is not going to be as different whether we're on east or west. And the east side is fine with me. Councilor Richards indicated, I would support going on that side. That is not a game breaker at all.
Any questions? Councilman? Okay. Yeah, and I would support the east side, too. We've had these discussions. I agree with your statement that regardless of where the station goes, it's going to create opportunity. Remember, point of the moment decisions. These are decisions that will play out over the next 20, 30, 40 years. And I think for the reasons that we've talked about, I would support going on the east side of Alma School. I think we get more bang for our buck on that side, actually.
And Mayor, just for the council's benefit, I know Councilmember Kavanaugh's not here, and it's actually in his district. It stated to me the other night, though, that he, as long as it's at Alma School, he was fine with either east or west Alma School.
So I'm seeing a lot of nods that I think we would prefer the east side. So let's change the resolution to that.
Great.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any other items on page 11? Page 12? And page 13. Okay, that's a long agenda. Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is item 2, which is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on fiscal 2010-11 budget issues. We'll start with a tentative summary.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. On Monday, you'll be asked to set our statutory limit for expenditures for our 10-11 budget under our home rule option. That will set the limit for the maximum amount of expenditure that could occur. We'll come back with a final budget on the 21st that will be somewhat different than the other. I just wanted to summarize, and I'm sorry that Councilmember Summers is not here today. This is the shortest budget presentation you'll ever see. Starting on page 2 of that presentation, I'm just tying out the numbers to your preliminary budget books that you've got. We broke out your federal stimulus grant funds just as informational purposes. That kind of skews some of the numbers on our totals. So our preliminary budget was just over $1 billion. We're estimating currently, this is where the number will change significantly from, or will change, I won't say significantly, from tentative adoption to the final, is our carryover and rebudget readjustments. We'll be going through all the finalizations of all those. For a total tentative budget currently, $1,135,870,000.
Chuck, why don't you go back just again and explain how we treated the stimulus dollars, the $11 million, what? That doesn't represent, some may think, well, no, we're only getting $11 million in stimulus. And we know that's not true.
That's a very good point.
Maybe elaborate a little bit more on that.
These are really new stimulus dollars that we're getting. Last year, you're going to see in our carryover and rebudget adjustments, if I go through, right now we've got about $12.8 million that we'll be rebudgeting from this year's allocation. So most of these are the new allocations from stimulus projects.
And the idea is we want to estimate as many stimulus dollars as we can so we can include that in the maximum budget.
That's correct.
Right. So we can,
because if we came up with a stimulus grant next year and it hadn't been included in the maximum budget, we couldn't spend it?
We'd be capped out on our budget.
We'd be capped out and
right.
We couldn't spend it.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay. So we're trying to be a little more conservative on the generous side, I guess.
Okay.
So we'll finalize all those issues on the rebudgets and the final stimulus numbers, but it will be less than the current tentative limit that we're setting. And then just agenda for the next several meetings. Of course, we're talking about adopting on the 7th for the tentative budget.
Chuck, before we go into that, just if you could, and I know you don't have it here, but if you could break down real quickly, the general fund portion of that $1.1 billion is right at or just below $300
million,
right?
$297 million, I believe. I'm going off memory.
And once again, I think that's
and that's
right.
The first time we've dropped below $300 million in
yes.
That,
probably 5 or 6 years, maybe. I don't know. It's been
last year it was 320.
Yeah.
318
something.
Last year, and I think it's 297 and some change from memory right now.
So over the last 2 to 3 years, and reminding everyone, this $1.1 billion includes all of our
utilities,
enterprise fund,
capital.
Which are all our utilities, our water, electric, solid waste.
Yeah, all the bonds, all water, the bond, pack,
all the bond,
everything
stuff,
we're spending
everything
on
like
capital
is grossed up and included in
debt
that
$1.1
billion. On our general fund, and this is pretty much in the ballpark of where it was a year or two ago, about $1.1 billion.
Yes.
But, and that includes stimulus and bond and things like that, which are not operating.
That is correct.
Monies, which is why that seems right. But from a general fund standpoint, what we're approving is substantially below what it was last year and even 2 years ago.
And this is still below, even with stimulus dollars in here, it's still below last year's number.
Yeah, correct. It's below, but we have a much bigger
yes.
hit, real dollar-wise,
correct.
Percentage-wise, on the general fund, which is our police, fire, libraries,
right.
our basic citizen service.
The reduction gets masked a little bit because of the stimulus dollars and the bond packages.
Coupled with the bond dollars.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is that we're using a lot of those bond dollars to leverage regional dollars, and those are actually included in here also.
They have to be included.
Because so what you say is we get almost on some of those regional bond projects, we get almost a 3-to-1 2-to-1.
It was originally set up as a 70-30, but due to inflation and their capping of their inflation, those will vary somewhat.
Well, say it's 2-to-1.
2-to-1. Yeah,
we get a 2-to-1 return, so it's a little misleading.
But
for example, you have a $20 million project. That whole $20 million is included in this, but we only end up paying about $7 million of that.
There you go.
And that's another good reason for the home rule, because it's not a locally generated expenditure per se. It's a regional expenditure that would exceed what our normal expenditure.
So that whole $20 million is included in there, but then we have a net reimbursement from the region of that $13 million.
Right.
Okay.
So, and that's a very good point. And we will have all those breakdowns for you in a presentation.
Yeah, when you throw out numbers like this, I just want to make sure that we put it into context. And really, we're looking at just below $300 million, which is substantially down. It's down. What was it last year, 320 something?
318.
320.
And before that, we were above 350.
We were at 380, if I recall, 386 at the top, the peak.
So in our general fund, we're down.
That's where we're taking the hits.
Yeah, we're down.
So
25,
we're down
30,
20,
40 percent.
25%.
Yeah,
25%.
Just 25%.
Okay, Alex.
Thank you, Mayor. It would be nice to have a comparison chart of general fund to other surrounding communities. Like Gilbert, off the top of your head, you know what Gilbert's?
Well, the problem with that, Councilman Finter, is they don't refine it the way we do. Each have different accounting policies. It's really not always an apples-to-apples comparison.
Okay. That's Town of Gilbert? It seemed like they have anybody know what their budget
is? Do they have
is?
Apples in Gilbert?
Well, we have their total operating budget, and we have that comparison we provided. We can bring that
total operating budget, because I think it'll add some perspective.
The chart that we did.
Yes, we've got it.
A couple weeks ago, we could include that back mm-hmm. here.
That would be nice to have, because I think people will be shocked to see.
It's really funny how everyone brags about how they're the most. I heard three cities within a week all brag that they were had the lowest number of employees per 1,000 residents, and that was real interesting. All East Valley cities.
Yeah, of course.
Three East Valley cities within a week, and I'm sitting there going, okay, whatever.
But we're the ones that actually
have it. Yeah, we're the ones that actually have it. Absolutely. And that's why it upset me so much. Because we were better than all those.
Is that really a good thing, though?
Well,
I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing.
You have to compare apples to apples, too. They don't have the gas utility or the electric utility.
No,
so
I
you
know.
Take that out of the mix, and we definitely
it's,
are the bottom.
It's a total meaningless number when you look at
it. Do we have apples in Mesa? Don't we have oranges?
Oranges. Pomegranates.
Oranges to
we
oranges.
Need to compare pomegranates with pomegranates. I don't like those either. Okay, back to the issue.
So
trying to divert. This is...
We'll have that for you.
Yeah, if you could get those compared, because it is good. I mean, it is good to put it in as much context as we can, not for Brad. But I think people need to understand, boy, that sounds so condescending. I apologize for that. I would like to understand where we are, to give some context, put it into perspective, not to go out and do what I've heard the other cities do. But it is interesting to me, as you see all these other budget discussions going on in our sister communities, to see, what the relationship is. I'd like to know where we are, because I tend to believe that from a general fund standpoint, just the numbers I've seen thrown out, Mesa's lean and mean. And I don't know whether that's something to brag about, or I think we, let's put it this way, I will brag about the fact that I think that we get more out of fewer resources than any other community. I am convinced of that. And because our city staff and everyone does a great job of really creating more out of less. So it would be nice to get that comparison and put it into context. Okay?
Yes.
Thank you. Councilman Richards.
A few weeks ago, we had asked for a legal analysis of a temporary suspension of stability pay. And I know people have been on vacation. Maybe I missed that. And I'm feeling a little uncomfortable about approving all this until that last little bit of issue was explored
for
this budget cycle.
I'm sorry. Mayor, Councilmember Richens, we'd be happy to provide it again because it's attorney-client information. We would recommend that it be provided in executive session. We can do that on Monday if you'd like.
Let's schedule that for Monday. Remember, this is the maximum, so we can still agree to this and then come down from that. So let's get that analysis, and we'll put it on e-session for Monday. And you want to go over the budget or the calendar now, which I think I interrupted you.
June 7th on Monday, adopt the tentative budget. We'll have a hearing related to that also for public comment. We'll introduce the utility rate ordinances June 21st, council meeting and a special council meeting. We'll have public hearings on the final budget, the 5-year capital improvement plan, and utility rates. So, three hearings. Adopt the final budget and the 5-year capital improvement plan and the utility rates. And then the last bit of business will be on July 8th. And that'll be adopting the secondary property tax levy, and that's the levy rate.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Now, the next item is discuss Downtown Mesa Association parking program. Ms. Lewis.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. My name is Natalie Lewis. I work in the City Manager's Office, and one of my responsibilities is to assist with downtown coordination and initiatives. And I'm joined today by Tricia Sorensen, also in the City Manager's Office, and one of her responsibilities is to help with administrative matters in public safety. And so she's here to assist if there's questions related to that. And also Shay Yoakum on my right, part of the Economic Development Department. The contracts that we're going to be talking about tonight are being managed by the Economic Development Department. And, of course, Shea is very active in our downtown, working on economic development opportunities and helping our businesses be successful. Before we get into the discussion on the contracts themselves, I was asked to just take a very quick review of the revenues or the model of the Downtown Mesa Association revenues and services. I like to see things in a visual way, and so I've put this together just because I like to see the interconnection of how things really work. And if you look at the two center circles, those really represent the assessments. As council knows, in 1985, the downtown property owners in the square mile a majority of them chose to assess themselves. And this is all per state statute, and council took action on by resolution to set that in motion. The city at the time was exempt because we are a government use, but we had the option to voluntarily participate in the assessment. And so the other circle up there relates to our contribution, the city's contribution to the assessment. And those monies are really commingled at the Downtown Mesa Association and are basically used for things related to a clean and safe downtown, and also the downtown promotions and special events, which is something that's very near and dear to our hearts. The outside ring represents the contracts that the city of Mesa has with the Downtown Mesa Association. And, of course, I've circled the two contracts that we're going to be focusing on today, parking management and parking enforcement. But the city, around the same time, created these contracts with the DMA to provide, well, for a couple of reasons. First, we were providing these kinds of basic services for the downtown like we were doing for the rest of the community, and there was some thought that having these funds in a central location in downtown could help provide some additional focus of those services for the downtown. We also knew that these funds could be used, commingled, whatever you want to say, so that together there could be an overall effect of supplementing the services in downtown. And our hope at the time, and still is today, was that going to a private model like that, a nonprofit private model, could create some efficiencies that the city of Mesa wasn't able to do. So those were the reasonings behind the contracts and the assessments and how the two kind of sources work together.
Councilman Higgins.
Thanks, Mayor. Two questions on that page. The word commingling. So we don't really know what it costs to do parking management and parking enforcement in downtown. I mean, have we ever gone out for like a quote to see what the real cost is so we know what the overflow that's commingled to do other things?
We know, Councilmember Higgins, we know that the majority of the funds come from the city's contracts and that some of the services are supplemented. And I don't believe that we've ever gone out for any kind of an effort like that. And
And because that really wasn't the purpose for why this was set up. It really wasn't set up in the sense of looking for DMA to be a kind of a procurement entity, different or just like any other entity. I mean, we specifically went to them because of their relationship and who they represented downtown. That was the whole point, was that this was a partnership with an entity that the city had created. And as a matter of fact, recently, in 2006, the city of Mesa went to the legislature specifically to get special legislation so that DMA could take over parking enforcement. I mean, before that, the laws and statutes didn't allow civilians to go and do parking enforcement. The city, in order to enhance its relationship with the DMA and to allow them to continue to privatize and take over more of the responsibility downtown, specifically sought out legislation so that they could do that, and it was a pass successfully. So we've always looked at this more as they're a partner. They're really an entity established, created by the city to take over these responsibilities. And so I don't think we've ever looked at them as kind of as a separate vendor or bidder for city services. We look at them more as an extension of the city to provide these services downtown.
But just to continue, but we kind of just came up with a sum of money. See, what I don't understand is how we came up with those numbers for those contracts.
Well, remember, these contracts are 20 years old. And certainly today we continue to review those and sit down with the DMA to look at whether or not they reflect the cost and where those dollars are being directed. I mean, recently, I don't know, was a year and a half ago or so, the mayor and I sat down with the DMA and talked about priorities and emphasis of where we'd like to see them spend some more of their effort. And so we reprogrammed some of the emphasis on parking and parking management so that some, and made available the Center Street facility so that they could take some of the savings from parking management, parking enforcement, and redirect that into marketing. So we sit down with them regularly, and obviously I think over time, as we look at these contracts for parking enforcement, parking management, they, we probably need to spend some more time to kind of clarify as the role of DMA and our expectations of DMA have continued to evolve. We probably need to go into those and clean those up. But how they were established years ago, I can't really speak to that, but and certainly it's difficult to do that without the even the DMA staff that was here when those were set up. So on both sides of the formula, you have entities that were individuals that are still trying to kind of work through this. I think as we work with DMA and the City Council and kind of work through the establishment of our expectations of DMA, and I know the Vice Mayor is working with a group that's going to kind of sit down and talk about that, that'll help us better define what these contracts and our services that we're expecting from DMA should be.
I mean, I would think that you would rather say this much money for this, and you know what? Well, and you have this much money for events or something along those lines, as opposed to here's a big sum of money, do parking and management, and any leftovers, do this with it. You know what I'm saying? As a person who's spending money, I would think I would rather say, hey, it costs you this much, and hey, you need $100,000,
Hold that thought for a minute,
sure.
And let's get through, because I think they're addressing some of these overall overriding reasons. We'll come back.
Can I ask one more question on that page, though?
No, of course you can.
last week, the number for the two parking contracts was $420,000, and this week it looks like it's
yes.
296. What happened? How did we cut out?
We're
going to cut out. Awesome. That was just a setup for you. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. One major update, and we just want to make sure this was clear for the council, is that the amounts have changed for the proposed contracts this year. And this is the amount. These are the amounts that are proposed and that are built into the existing budget that you are taking action on right now. But in 2009 and 10, the parking enforcement contract was $120,000, and that has been reduced now to $82,200. The parking management was $266,000 and has been reduced now to about $215,000. And basically, the City of Mesa, the Economic Development Department, had gone back to DMA because we were in a place of reducing, you know, our budgets for the general fund, and we asked them to do the same thing. And so they ended up reducing their overall budgets now and within these two contracts for an amount of $89,288. Another update that we want to make sure is clear, and City Manager Brady already mentioned this, is that the Downtown Mesa Association is really going through very significant transition right now. Transition for their staff, two of their main staff members who are most intimately and had been most intimately familiar with all of their budgeting have since decided to move on. And they also have a board that is going through some transitioning and looking at the way they want to be structured and how they want to budget and where they want to put their funds in the future. And so all of these discussions are happening now. And so as a result of that, we just want to be very clear that when and if we share any dollars today, these are all estimates. There's a lot of research and a lot of planning that's going on. It's going on in an expedited fashion. We know that, you know, a lot of people are anxious to see things change and create some clarity. They've heard that. The DMA's heard that. City staff has heard that. And we are working with them to move forward in that regard. So we wanted to focus first on the information that we do know today about each of the contracts, and much of the language that you're going to see here comes just directly from the contracts themselves, and again, we need to work on them. But the overall purpose of the parking enforcement contract is that the DMA would become our professional parking enforcement contractor, that they're responsible for all civil parking violations, and that they do that within our square mile, which is basically our university, to Mesa Drive and
Broadway and Country.
I get nervous up here. Also related to parking enforcement is that the DMA is responsible for providing some comprehensive general liability insurance with a minimum coverage of $2 million per incident.
And Natalie, I mean, not to cut you off, but unless there's some questions as to the specific things, what people do, why don't we just jump to parking management? I think we understand that parking enforcement is people drive around, and if you parking illegally, someone issues a ticket, okay?
Okay. Parking management, the purpose there is that they become the professional parking manager for all of the public parking within the Mesas downtown. Again, the same areas we just...
Now, when we talk about public parking, these are city-owned...
These are city-owned lots, city-owned
and
garages,
and garages
public,
and those things. So when we say public parking, these are basically city-owned facilities and land and right-of-way.
Correct. All
correct.
Public right-of-way.
So parking on the street,
on and
which
off
is parking
the
in the right-of-way, parking in all the... And there's how many city garages? Four or five?
Five, I believe.
Five. Okay. All right.
It says four in
well,
the contract,
garages.
But I believe we do five.
Well, there's more lots. There's many more lots, but
right.
There's five than five garages.
Right.
There's 6,000. I have about 13,000 public parking spaces
yeah.
in downtown.
Spread among
almost
five
split
garages.
Between 6,000 parking spaces in the garages and 7,000 on street within the downtown square mile.
In the garages and the lots, or is the street
six,
parking include
6,000 in the parking garages.
Okay. Not lots, just garages.
Just garages. Correct.
Right.
And 7,000 on-street parking spaces.
On-street and in lots. Because we have both, we manage both
yeah.
lots.
So,
and,
okay,
and
so parking spaces in garages and lots
yeah.
is the 6,000.
Okay.
And then on-street, so that wouldn't be a lot, that's just literally on the right-of-way,
yeah.
is 7,000.
All right.
Okay.
So about 13,000 parking spaces. And the only reason I want to know the difference is that obviously in a garage, you're in the garage, there's different things than driving down the street and looking for someone who's parking at a meter or something like that.
Well, and the difference too is that, and you'll hear this, is that when it's a parking garage or parking lot, we have a different level of maintenance and
right.
care
that's why
that we're responsible for.
That, right.
Right. So we have to, garages have utility costs, they have
right.
cleaning, pickup, litter, there is maintenance of those facilities.
Yeah. Catherine Higgins?
Just what isn't it true that like long-term maintenance, if there was resurfacing or structure repair, that actually comes out of the City of Mesa's general fund? That isn't, or whatever fund, I'm sorry, but the City of Mesa responsibility and not a fund that the DMA has to actually do the repairs?
Yes, according to the contract, that if there is any major capital improvement projects that are needed and upgrades, that is a city responsibility.
But I was focusing on the maintenance component of that.
This
now.
Is the maintenance
yeah.
and mostly the routine.
There's a broken light, if there's in a parking garage, if there's
litter, graffiti.
Litter, any of that kind of stuff, right.
Okay, so we've already talked about this. So professional management of all of our parking, on-street, off-street, event parking. They set the pricing parameters. They provide some marketing for the parking and a major emphasis on the whole litter removal and the real cleaning and maintenance of the lots and garages and public right-of-way.
Okay.
The DMA and the facilities maintenance people work together to ensure there's no unnecessary duplication in this effort. The DMA is licensed by the city to manage parking for special events. We allow them to use our garages, and they do at times set fees for that. And when they do collect fees, those monies come back directly to the City of Mesa. The information that I've received from the DMA is that they helped the Mesa Arts Center for 57 events this year, and they collected about $57,000, which has come back to the City of Mesa in our general fund. Again, they provide the general liability insurance. And here are some specific tasks that they do. They have to monitor the overall, you know, the global program and its successes and recommend any changes. This is one of the things about the model of the DMA is if there are any savings in their budgets, that they make some recommendations for how those things can be reinvested into downtown. They remove all of the bulk items, the litter in the downtown and the right-of-way. They clean and they maintain those lots, like we were saying, the parking garages. They issue some permits and some parking assignments, and they make recommendations related to signage and marking that are out there.
So does staff have a, you know, what I've heard is that we've had this long-term relationship, and we even went so far as to 4 years ago back to the legislature to make sure that, DMA personnel were empowered to carry out some of these duties. DMA, our contracts have been reduced substantially this year to coincide with cuts that the city has made. What is the staff's recommendation going forward, and given the timing and where we are right now?
You know, where we are right now is that we need to go through a slight update, or at least an update of some kind for the contracts by June 30th, which doesn't give us a whole lot of time between now and then. And we do know that the DMA is in major transition. The city of Mesa has questions about some of the contracts. We want to create some additional clarity and some better organization there, and we want to work with the DMA to do that. I think from a staff perspective, what would be a reasonable approach could be to continue moving forward, go ahead and approve the contracts the best we can by June 30th with the very clear understanding both from DMA and the city staff that we need to continue this work together on an expedited fashion, and bring back any changes you know, that we're going to make.
As we need to reevaluate, I mean, since it's a long-term program, we haven't looked at it in detail in a while. What your suggestion is, we need to go back and sit down and have a heart-to-heart and really talk about what if any, changes need to be made into the services and how we're handling those.
Yes.
Okay, and that's what you're suggesting. Vice Mayor.
All right. Well, nobody in this room was around when DMA was organized, created as a body by this council, not these individuals, but by the city council. Some of those contracts, things that have taken place over the years, we can second guess, we can question. We've been reading these contracts and saying, okay, we need to reevaluate these and specify, have more clarity to them. And that's something that we have to do. As you said, the DMA's in a tremendous flux. There's a lot of change going on there. The most important part of this, as I see, when it comes to the contracts for parking enforcement and management and so forth, is a very basic premise. And it was brought up earlier in this meeting as far as, do we contract with people locally or outside? Because a very important part of this picture is, by contracting with DMA, the way that we've done it, it's an indirect way of helping to get funds to promote the downtown and to improve and strengthen the downtown in all aspects, not just events, but promote in general. By doing so, any monies above and beyond what it actually costs to do the parking stays in downtown, is reinvested in the downtown to promote the downtown. If we try to take the approach, we're going to put it up for bid, and we have people who are not down here, that money goes out. It's gone. The whole purpose of DMA created in the first place was strengthening and promoting downtown. And if we want to get real nitpicky and breaking down dollars and cents of what exactly is what, we can go and we can get all of the breakdown of costs from DMA. That's public record, because DMA was created as a government entity by the very action taken by the Mesa City Council 25 years ago. Oh, yeah. Those records are all available. Anybody can look at how it's broken down and how it's accounted for. But the bottom line is, we want to keep all monies above and beyond the cost of doing business right here in downtown. And the whole deal of changing location, that we're providing a building at an extremely low rent for the purpose of letting them redirect those funds into reinvesting downtown. There's a lot happening, a lot coming up. And again, with DMA in flux, trying to reinvent, take a totally different approach is going to be very challenging at best. But we're looking at those contracts. You said by the end of the month, we need to have something in place. And we're, granted, we're looking at those old contracts and scratching our heads, quite frankly, at some of the verbiage and the way it was laid out. Mm-hmm. So we're restructuring those contracts. But the very premise of why DMA even exists goes back to why we even have these contracts with them, because we're focusing on the people who actually live, do business, and are downtown all the time, they're the ones who are the board members for DMA. They're the ones who will be making the decisions, the policy decisions for DMA, much the same as we, as a council, are the policy group for the city, and then we direct the city manager to enforce that policy. That's the way it's set up, and DMA is going to be the same way. Historically, it may not have always appeared that way, but that's the way that they're refocusing right now. And so I think it's very critical that we, one, revamp the contracts, but we don't make this more difficult and challenging than it really needs to be, because the focus is really keeping things downtown and promoting downtown.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Councilmember Finter.
I appreciate the Vice Mayor's comments. I agree with him. Beautifully stated. I think this is a great, fresh opportunity to just start again, look at everything that we're doing, and a lot of positives, try and capitalize on all the good things that have happened and get it in place. And this is a great public-private partnership, I think, that can really work well. And so I'm very supportive of looking at this, and we always have the opportunity to move and change if there's challenges. And so I'm very supportive of staying the way we do.
Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. The last week I brought this up for discussion because at the time, well, we still are, we're losing 12 people in municipal security. So the whole question was, municipal security, can they also do this parking enforcement? So, I mean, that's how the ball got rolling. Can we save some internal jobs? All right. So it sounds like we didn't even look. We just looked at the contracts, see what they do in detail. But we never actually looked to see if our internal people that are getting laid off could do those things. And I think I hear the group saying we don't want to actually do that change at this time.
I don't think we heard said that at all.
Okay. I mean, well.
What I heard was, in looking at the specifics, we find that we have two contracts, one which is a parking enforcement, which is really, if you look at the dollar amount in it, involves maybe one and a half people. The other one, parking management, really deals with non-security type issues for the most part. It deals with maintenance and management and things like that. And you know, how that translates into taking someone from one department into another, you know, I don't know. I just don't see a direct transfer where one day they can be, a person could be providing security at this building, and the next day, all of a sudden, we're asking them to drive through a parking lot to clean up garbage. I don't see that as a direct. I'm not saying that that can't happen, but I'm trying to understand the direct correlation between one objective, which is to help retain jobs, and the other one, which is these contracts, because I don't see a direct fit. And I don't see those as the same issue. I think they're both important issues, and I 100% support the idea that, listen, if we're going to have a reduction in staff, our first priority is to try and figure out if there's a way that we can keep valuable employees employed somewhere. I don't think there's any disagreement with that. The way that it was explained to me, and maybe I'm missing something, I'm having a hard time seeing that direct correlation.
And Mayor and Council, listen, believe me, if the burden of worrying about our employees that are laying off is no greater than my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And we're doing everything we can to place employees anywhere in this organization. But we're also limited by, we don't want to put someone in a position where it is nothing compared to what their current role is. Mm-hmm. It's not fair to them. Certainly the DMA, some of these contracts have some elements that maybe municipal security does do a portion of their time, but really when we look at their roles and responsibilities and their job descriptions today, and frankly where their compensation is, because they're very qualified and they're skilled and trained in municipal security, is really not the same level of some of the positions that we have DMA executing for us. And it just seemed kind of so we ran into that dilemma. That's part of the dilemma. The other part of the dilemma is really the way this contract is set up. It's a privatization model. It's already privatized. Now, we've gone through we've gotten special legislation to support the privatization. And it seemed like that was contrary to our philosophy with DMA to then bring back to the city some of these services. Now, that's certainly council's prerogative, but I guess the answer to your question, and we appreciate your concern and efforts to try to find every opportunity, and I think we share the same thing. We just couldn't find within these contracts the right fit that we felt like that would make it a reasonable transition for any of our employees. And really the way, as you look at this, the way the DMA subcontracts out, they have a lot of part-time kind of labor that does some of this. I think that gives them the flexibility. It also allows them to keep their labor costs down, where our full cost labor with wages and benefits is much greater than what DMA is paying for their subcontractors. Listen, we're looking for every opportunity we can. Again, we've got some contracts coming up with our light rail security that we're going to try to push hard on to get some of our employees placed. We're going through our organization today and seeing if there's some other positions they may be qualified for to help them out. But the answer to your question, I think, is we, as we go through these contracts and look at the types of services that are being that we contract DMA to do, we just didn't see a place where we could bring something like that back to the city reasonably that would really make a substantial difference. I mean, maybe one person, you know, you could say, but then it creates this kind of dilemma where the city's now taken this little piece of the services for downtown in-house and carved it out from the rest of it, and it seemed like it was probably not the most reasonable approach.
But can you continue on with this contract discussion? You know, we've had this discussion. We've been in office 2 years, and we've had budgets. This is our third budget cycle, and we've talked about this stuff. This is our third time. So the question I have is why we couldn't just extend this as a six-month contract with specific targets. I know that they're in flux, you know, within the next 6 months. You know, hire an executive director, assure that maybe someone in the city of Mesa has a seat at that table to make sure, not that we, you know, that we have input into the quality or the type of person that we're getting for this job,
well,
since
I
it's so integral.
Let me just say this. I'm not shy to say that the city of Mesa provides two-thirds, three-fourths of the budget, DMA. We're the largest landowner. We have the most vested interest. I'm not interested in micromanaging what any department or what DMA does, but we have a vested interest in what goes on. And I think if one thing that you've heard from the vice mayor and from others is that this council has some questions and is very concerned about how DMA manages this transition. I think we, and this isn't a criticism as to what's gone on, but downtown is in itself in a very significant transition. Not only the things that have happened, the good things that have been going on the last year or two, you know, we have successful events, we have an engaged merchant group, we have engaged property owners, and I think at a level that you have not seen in downtown in a long, long time, and that's happened in the last year or so. And we also have a very significant event coming up in the next 2 or 3 years, which is how we manage through the construction of light rail. And then what do we do after light rail? There are some huge things going on in downtown. And I can tell you we're talking to groups about relocating downtown that we would not have talked to and weren't talking to before. I spent a couple, 3 hours with a major educational institution the other day about talking about our downtown. And the reason being is that what's happened in light rail. And there are opportunities that are on the horizon that did not exist. And I think it's very clear that almost to a person, this council is very, very concerned with how DMA handles that transition. Concerned, interested. We're deeply interested. But I think there's a lot of concerns also. I think we will take an active role. And I don't think that DMA should take this relationship for granted and these contracts for granted. I think that we need to look at how these are being managed. I think the mayor, and as Councilmember Fenner said, was very, very right on point in saying that the reason we have these relationships is specifically to build a better downtown. And, you know, I think what we're concerned with is as with any organization, are you truly working toward, and the things you're doing, accomplishing that goal and that purpose? And I think we have a unique opportunity with the transition in leadership, with the transition in downtown, and with, I think, the interest that this council has taken to really refocus, redirect, and recommit to building a better downtown. And that means DMA doing things they haven't done before. That means, you know, literally redirecting their efforts. And we've been very, very explicit in things such as promotion and things such as events, and finding a way to work together, as Councilman Richens said a couple of meetings ago, to work with all the groups who bring energy and expertise and desire, passion, and bringing all that together in building a downtown that I think everyone knows we can have. We're well on the way. Now would be a bad time to settle back into the way we did things yesterday. And if looking at these contracts helps us to refocus and helps us to define where we're going to be, I'm all for that. On the other hand, I don't want to create a situation that's so disruptive, and I would agree with the Vice Mayor here, that we are counterproductive. Because I think that by going in and focusing on minor things, the truth of the matter is, could we get ABC Janitorial to go clean the parking garages? Sure. But as the Vice Mayor said, okay, what does that do? That means garbage is picked up, but it doesn't get us anywhere further. I would hope that we can continue the partnership with DMA in a way where we not only get the garages cleaned up and the trash, but we also keep that money downtown. We direct it toward events and toward activities that really build the downtown. And I think it's clear that there's a little bit of uneasiness here questions as to whether where we are right now is really getting us there. So I'd like to spend the next little while, and Mr. Brady, if you have some specific
just quickly,
proposals.
I say sometimes we get fixated on contracts. The contracts really are supposed to reflect our goal and what we're trying to achieve together. So really that's where I think we need to spend our time. Not necessarily, I mean, the contracts come once we all define what the partnership and what we're trying to do. Well, my sense is, and I think as the DMA evolves with their new leadership, as we sit down and define the role of DMA and maybe taking on more responsibilities in some areas, we'll take that and then reflect that in contract.
Well, the other thing is, I think we need to, I think what has happened over the last 20 years is, where is the separation between the base assessments and the contracts? And I don't know that we can easily partition those out, because what's happened is you have a DMA activity which is funded by a combination of assessments, which are legal requirements, and contracts, which basically are discretion. But really, in the mission of DMA, those all fit together.
No, and specifically, I've Tom and I sat down, and he has given me a chart that shows that each of the contracts paid a percentage of the
on the overall mission
time of the overall cost. So,
and what we need to look at, I agree with you, is the overall mission and how it fits in, and the idea is that we this is still our money. We have to make sure that we're getting the biggest bang for the buck. But I think, like the Vice Mayor said, let's concentrate on how DMA is doing things and where that money is going. Do we make sure that it stays in downtown and it actually builds a downtown?
Mayor, back to the whole six-month concept, because I really think it is a critical time now. There is overhaul. There's change. A new executive director coming on board hopefully soon. And with a six-month target of the contract, it really says, you know what? They are serious. They're not just saying we're serious like we have for the last couple of years. We want to see changes. And in that time would give staff time to work with what are the specific targets we want to have, what are the measurables, instead of the word have events, have X amount of events in X amount of time. Instead of just this, I feel that the contracts are really too general. And you know what? We are doing great things in downtown now. Let's put them into the contract and have measurables instead of, next year we'll try a little harder.
Performance measures. And I say the 6 month. I hear the 6 month. My concern is, I don't know if I want to have this conversation absent an executive director. I think would be a very limited conversation. And so I think what we need to do is sit down and figure, I don't know what the timeline is for the recruitment and hiring of a new executive director, and then getting their feet on the ground. I agree that needs to happen. I think the expectation this is going to happen in 6 months, when we don't even have the recruitment of the executive director. I'm not sure where that is, and having them on board, because ultimately that's the person that we have to hold accountable for this.
See, but now you're just telling me where it's going to be longer than another 6 months. So basically we're here next year again, and I don't want to wait a whole another year. It's too important of an activity for the city. You know, we need to be.
Vice Mayor and then Councilmember Richards.
All right. This is really fascinating because perhaps I just didn't explain well enough. You talk about representation on the DMA. I have been sitting on the DMA board meetings for 8 years. I can tell you that right now, with the transition taking place, the board has taken a position of responsibility that has not existed in that whole 8 years that I've been sitting on the board. With the transition taking place, Freddie Curry with his executive committee are spending well over 8 hours every week in multiple meetings working on revamping the whole organizational structure of making sure of what it's going to be, talking about what these contracts are going to be. To try and make a six-month deadline is unrealistic and not fair, because I personally am in contact with Freddie. I'm watching how the executive committee is doing it. I'm not in there micromanaging what they're doing. I am monitoring what they're doing and giving suggestions as I feel necessary. But the executive board, the DMA board, is assuming the role that they need to be. And if we try to meddle with that right now, it is a huge, huge mistake. And people who try to meddle with that are not allowing the process of a duly elected board that was created to do their job. Regardless of what happened the previous 25 years, right now what is taking place is the way it should be, and allowing that board to assume its role and to do what it needs to do in restructuring and reorganizing. For us to micromanage that would be a very serious mistake.
Councilmember Richens.
Councilmember Jones, or Vice Mayor Jones, I agree. And you've done a great job over the last 8 years being in that, watching all the transition that's happened in our downtown and with DMA. And, you know, a year contract, I think, really gives some stability. I work in nonprofit world. I know how long, and I've seen how long it takes to hire an executive director, get somebody in place, get somebody up to speed, because you're working for a board-driven and mission-driven organization, and it's a real challenge to get an executive director in and have them have to deal with their financial stability as the first order of business once they get in is really challenging. And so I think this year, I totally appreciate what Councilmember Higgins is saying, and agree with her that we need to continue to push to make sure that we build a better downtown, as the mayor said. But, you know, a six-month contract I don't think is necessarily getting us to that end. You know, let's give them the stability, the financial stability for the next year. We can reevaluate that stuff. We have to give it some time, because there's some great things happening in our downtown, great changes being made, and we got to give time for this organization to transition. The hardest thing for a nonprofit to do is to change 25 years of tradition. And that's exactly what they're doing right now, is changing 25 years of tradition, and they want to shake it up. And I don't know that I want necessarily DMA to be the one doing events downtown. I want all of these groups that have an interest in downtown, the merchants groups, the property owners, the car cruisers, the motorcycle guys, the arts groups, all of these people need to be the ones doing events downtown. No one organization is necessarily going to be taking the lead on the events. They need to be organic, and that's what makes our downtown marvelous. Is I remember when we did the first car show, it was very organic in how it happened. It was real. It didn't have a contrived festival feeling. It was like people were in an urban area being able to just have some fun. And I think that's what is given the charm to our events in our downtown. And you get that because it's done in a multi-stakeholder environment. And, you know, that's what I want to see continue. And so DMA, I think, needs this whole year to just get their revamping together and get their new executive director on board, somebody innovative, and somebody, you know, you think of Johan. You think some of the great characters we've had in our downtown recently, and with Kyle's, we do have a seat at the table, and Vice Mayor Jones has filled it very well, but I think he will help make that transition happen successfully. And so let's give them as much stability as we can from the city side to make sure that transition is successful.
But Councilman Fender, or you want to?
Yes, I did. Just
okay,
to
go ahead.
One thing I love about this council is we challenge the status quo at every turn, and this is just great if you look at different issues. And I appreciate Councilmember Higgins.
I think staff is out there wondering whether they
no.
agree
with it. I love it.
They would like a little less challenging of the status quo.
Oh, it just makes my day. You know, to have this active discussion every turn, what's the old sacred cows? I just got to tell you, I really appreciate this conversation.
You know, and Council Americans, I don't sense a majority supporting the six-month, but I would like to offer up something. We have Vice Mayor Jones. We have Natalie, who's from the city manager's office, and Trish. We have a very involved staff and elected official presence here. How about if, as we go through this process, Mr. Brady, if we can have periodic formal reports back from the vice mayor and from staff, from Natalie, especially as it relates to the search. I'd like to get an update as to the search of the executive director, Freddie. And, you know, when you get to a point, just let us know what's going on a more formalized basis. And then maybe what we can do is that we can set a time where periodic, quarterly, or in 6 months or whatever, we can get a formal update as to where we are. Because, you know, once again, I think that Councilmember Higgins brings some real concerns and some concerns that are shared. I think that what we're saying, though, is that maybe we want to take a little bit different approach to review those and analyze those than a hard, firm, drop-dead date. We would like to give you the flexibility, but would also like you like to know more about how you're proceeding, because I'm interested. I'm excited about some of the changes that we're seeing. Just anxious to see how they play out.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Freddie Curry. I'm the board chair for the Downtown Mesa Association. I would agree with you. We are in one of the key elements of changing and transition for the last 25 years. It has been status quo. One of the key things that we are going through this process of redefining the structure within the DMA itself, with our staff, with the board itself, we do look to have the city of Mesa with a seat at the table in our executive director search. We also look to have the chamber and Mesa Convention Bureau. Those are all key stakeholders to us who our executive director has to be able to build a relationship with in order for us to get this downtown community where we want it to go. One of the things that we are absolutely committed to is reinvesting in the downtown area. And as Vice Mayor Jones stated, is that the dollars that we save, we look to reinvest in the downtown. That's our goal. That's our mission. And nothing more than that. So, you know, in regards to, you know, to change things in 25 years, it's not going to happen overnight. Are we committed to making a better downtown? Absolutely. Do we feel that the city of Mesa and other key stakeholders within the community have a vested interest in that? Absolutely. And we will continue to make sure that we have everyone involved in this process that we feel is necessary to be involved in that process to make sure we get the right executive director here for the downtown.
Thank you, Freddie. And if I could reiterate something that Councilman Fringe said, this council does question everything, but just we don't change just for change's sake. Absolutely. We just question everything. And we find out that there's some things we've been doing for 25 years that are pretty dang good.
Right.
And will help us in the next 25 years. There's other things we find that it's not that they're bad, it's just that they're not relevant today. They may have been relevant last year or last decade, but they're not going to get us to next year. And I think that's one thing that I appreciate with working with this council, is that we're always looking at how's this going to make us better tomorrow?
Absolutely.
And there are no sacred cows in that, because we're willing to say, you know, we're not willing to live in the past. We're willing to say, how will this improve us? How does this help us? So I hope that as you go through that you look at everything, you embrace those things that have worked well and get us to tomorrow, and that you're willing to throw things out that while they may have been good yesterday, aren't going to get us to tomorrow.
Well, I will tell you that a lot of discussion has been on fiscal responsibility, and that's one of nobody is probably more fiscal responsible than I am. It's one of the first things I stated when I got in as board chair, is that we will make sure that we have a responsibility to the city of Mesa and to our stakeholders in the community, that we take care of business in a proper fiscal way that we should be.
Well, and I would like to thank you. I mean, we sort of overlooked the commitment and that you and your fellow board members have. I mean, you guys don't get paid for doing this. You volunteer. You're you know, you could be home doing a whole bunch of other things while you're, rather than be in those meetings that the Vice Mayor talked about. So I really appreciate the time and effort that you put in.
Thank you.
Okay, so if that's a maybe not a consensus, but at least a majority, we're going to move forward with that. Are you clear on the direction?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Acknowledge receipt of minutes from various boards and committees. I have a motion second. By Councilmember Rich and second by the Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, those have been accepted. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Vice Mayor.
Last week I had a National League of Cities committee meeting for public safety and crime prevention. And as would well be expected, I didn't bring it up, but obviously others did, and we had a little bit of discussion on immigration.
There's something going on there?
Surprised, aren't we? But actually, it was an interesting discussion because, by and large, they were supportive of the premise of Arizona doing something, but there were questions on some specific parts of it, but generally, there's a frustration nationwide of the lack of response from our federal government. And so it was a very interesting discussion, which I think we're going to resume more of that at our next meeting in the fall. But we had a very successful meeting. It's great working with people from around the country to get their perspective, to get their input on issues, to throw things out at them and see how they respond to them. And so I think they're very productive to participate at the National League of Cities.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Yeah, just an item that Councilmember Higgins identified in the agenda. I think we'd like to just go back and make sure, clarify the item about the police staffing ratios.
All right.
You were correct in that was a very large ratio. The number should have been 0.008.
Awesome.
So there's quite a
significant... Hey, what's a couple zeros among friends?
Yeah. About 100 officers.
Great.
So, thank you for catching that. And then just a reminder to the council that prior to the council meeting on June 7th, we have a Community and Neighborhood Services Committee meeting at 3:30. And then we'll have another study session on June 10th. And also just want to remind the council for the meetings in July before our summer break, we'll be meeting on Thursdays. Okay, so we'll have two council meetings. Beginning Thursday, July 1st, we'll have in the evenings, and then we'll have another one Thursday, July 8th, City Council meeting that evening also. We're debating whether you want to do a study session prior to the council meeting, but not. We won't meet at 7:30 in the morning and have you come back again at 5 unless.
I can't get used to that.
You would like to. We don't want to break out of the habits.
Well, let's look at the agendas. Let's look at the agendas, and we might have to consider maybe doing a study session if the 8th ends up being a heavy agenda, maybe on Monday or Tuesday morning to make sure that we cover some of the stuff of the agenda.
We'll try to have a lot of that information ahead of the because they come so quickly. We can probably
get
some briefing parts.
Right, and if we can front load it as much as we can on the July 1st meeting. Okay. If not, we'll just leave open the option if something big comes up to have maybe a Monday or a Tuesday.
Okay.
Even a Wednesday, something before that day so that if there is something.
It's really the July 8th one that will come quickly.
Right.
And so we should all pretty much know even what that draft agenda is on July 1st. So we may be doing two agenda reviews on July 1st. So that may be the way to
I think it. We did that last year, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, so we'll try to make sure it's not too confusing. Okay. And just a reminder, we are out in the communities on the zoning code update. Several workshops are taking place in all the districts during the month of June. So we just want to make sure council is aware of that. We have a District 5 zoning code update workshop coming up on June 10th from 6:30 to 8 at Fire Station 216, which is at... 7966 East McDowell Road. And then there will be others coming on during the rest of the month also. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Carker, do we have any requests to speak from the public?
No requests, Mayor.
All right. We now entertain a motion. Have a motion from the Vice Mayor, second from Councilmember Richens, center in executive session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We'll now move into executive session. Thank you very much.